When you wake up on your 40th birthday living in a rented trailer when you recently lived with your wife and kid in a house, you definitely want to savor the moment. With a caress or two beneath your shorts, you want to pay your respects to your half-limp dick that's only taking any stand today because of the occasion. You want to hit your head so hard on the ceiling that you shout, "Surprise!" Next, take stock of your surroundings. The potty inside the closet, the grimy carpet that's patterned with what you think are balloons, the plastic coffee cups so they won't break in a brawl or a bust, until you can taste the L forming loser on your tongue. Of course, you can see those cups as half empty, half full, your choice all the way, according to your sponsor, Ricky, who explained his earth-rocking theory the other night when he came by unannounced, right before he chapsticked his mouth and let out a polite little fart. By the time you remember Ricky's condescending smile, if you're as soft inside as you are big and tall on the outside, you're crying in your sweet instant coffee that's lukewarm and full to the spilling brim. Buck up, because 40's nothing on a guy, according to your sister, who made her annual call last night. Before your phone ran out of minutes, she said, 40's the new 20. 20's the new newborn, I gather, you said, but she was gone. Birthdays never mattered before. Before, everything seemed to be getting better, like a dramatic TV movie with a fair ending. If you look back at 33, you see yourself on the rig, with more hair in front, a nice-looking, overgrown guy with a crap job. At 35, you see the start of a gut, but you also see Gail and your infant son waiting for you at home. You see yourself managing the hotel restaurant. How Gail and you felt rich. For you personally, 40 should have meant doing things like starting Ned to preschool, starting him on reading if he wanted, not living in a cell on wheels that smells chronically of cat piss. Move, shave your big face, go all out and slap it with cologne, wear the white shirt Ricky brought over wrapped in cellophane. Clean jeans for pants, fine, he said so. It won't be the jeans. It'll be your words when he or she asks about last year's felony assault and the restraining order. That's where you like to lose. Get your act together, you say to the mirror after gluing a scrap of TP to your jaw. But you don't mean it in AA terms, and you know it. You're not even an alcoholic, and you don't mean that in the cliche way every alcoholic says it. The proof is you never were one before Ned hit the ground. Ricky's hatchback feels luxuriously warm, and he's got an extra Dunkin' Donuts coffee for you that he bought with a coupon. I am super excited about this opportunity for you, Laird, Ricky says. I really am. Listen, the food's good at this place. It really is. And the staff's nice people. Thanks for setting it up, man, you tell him. I'm psyched. Happy birthday, by the way. How's your coffee? Tastes like scalding ice cream, you say. Just the way I like it. Got enough room for your long legs? Move the seat. Ricky, his round gut caged beneath the steering wheel, sucks his coffee and tries to act nonchalant when he says to you, you don't have to discuss the trouble at length, you know. I think they need to hire somebody pretty quick. In other words, they're desperate. Why else interview me on Sunday? Ricky means well. Even his Darwin beard bothers you today. It's just, if she mentions the record, I'd play it cool. I really would. Check. You can tell me the story again anytime you feel like it. Check, you tell him, remembering how mechanically he nodded and winced like an android grief counselor when you described Ned's accident in brief. So it's a she, you hear yourself ask him? The restaurant, Jerry's, an outhouse with windows, is such a downer you have to will yourself to leave Ricky's sauna and walk inside. You know Denny's. This is Apocalypse Denny's. Grease-scented, the walls covered in framed photos of fried eggs and cold fries, like they're famous dead people. You're interviewing for junior waitstaff, a guy who used to manage a restaurant that served the best seafood in Galveston. You observe a handful of solemn diners at flatware clinking work. When the manager sees you, she makes a no-nonsense salute with two fingers. The only good surprise is this chick's eyes. She's not hot by TV rules, not young, not dolled up. But her eyes are green-blue and her skin is milky, with two tiny enhancing moles, like constellations on her neck. Red work shirt with a name tag that says Sammy Lee. She's 40 plus, because you can see pencil lines near her mouth. Her ponytail is honest without anything else going on, which you like. She's the kind of person, you realize, is actually more beautiful than almost anyone else you've ever met. But it takes a minute to register because she hasn't painted any obvious signs. "We need someone for dinner, which starts at 4, she says. "Goes to midnight." "That's a long meal." Sammy Lee smiles professionally without showing teeth. You sit across from each other in a booth that squeaks if you shift, which you can see she finds unfortunate. "Would you be able to work nights and weekends?" "Yeah, of course. I recently gave up world tours with my rock band." "We don't serve here," she says, searching out the window as if trouble might be on the way, fanning her hands like wings she means to still. "Jerry's doesn't have a liquor license." "Who is Jerry?" Nearby, a hunched fellow drags his knife screaming against his plate, and everywhere the air smells like a calendar year of bacon. Sammy Lee looks up at you, looks out the window again, hooks a stray hair behind her ear. She's wearing a honking wedding ring, too big like a toy. "There is no Jerry," she says. "R.I.P. "Oh, sorry. R.I.P. is one of those sayings you've come to detest. Abbreviated condolences, but you let it go by." "No, he was 80. His son owns the place these days, Perry." "You got to be kidding me with these names." She smiles urgently, and you see her skinny teeth she means to hide. "You've got experience waiting, my whole life. And I know you moved into management." "Yes." She's nodding amid the lull. You're on the verge of telling her why your career in management didn't last, in your own words, but she interrupts. "Do you have any practical questions for me?" she says. "How's the food?" "Better than average, I think. We're always looking to improve." "Tips?" "Order the chicken fried steak. Everybody likes it." You laugh because she means well. "Tips add up if you work a full schedule, which you will," she says. "I see you're married," you say, eyeing her glass ring. "Any job-related questions for me?" she asks, mouth tense, wrinkles darkening. She searches out the window again. "For what?" Somehow you think she isn't married. "You look closely at my file?" She nods. "How come I get this job so easy?" "We're understaffed," she says. That and Ricky's a solid reference. "Maybe you're wired. Maybe you're weird. You want her to ask you about your past, but she doesn't seem to know how to broach it." "Any other alcoholic on the job?" you come out and say it. "Alcoholics are anonymous, Laird," she says. Her voice is smooth, lovely. She looks at her hiring forms, raises an index finger. "But that would be me. Jerry helped me out a few years ago when I needed it." She leads you to a small storeroom to get the black bolero tie you have to wear with black trousers and a turquoise shirt that you'll have to buy yourself at Penny's. In here, you're forced together. You give her as much room as you can. "What do I call you?" "Sammy's fine. Captain for me." She won't laugh, not in here. "Oh, wait, I meant to ask about," Sammy says, and you think, here it comes. And your heart speeds up, and you wonder which part you'll start with. Meanwhile, she grabs a steering wheel-size roll of TP for the John. "I need you to take out the garbage after hours," she says. "After dark, you'll be the only suitable male on hand." "I like being the only suitable male on hand," you say, feeling newly low. You sit in the booth and sign forms, the toilet paper cradled in her lap. Then she says one word that you've always hated. She says, "Congrats," which sounds like the best you can do is not actually very good. Today, it hits you like a curse.
Betsy Boyd reading an excerpt from her short story, A Case of the Mondays. Boyd teaches creative writing at the University of Baltimore and serves as literary editor of BaltimoreFishbowl.com. On Monday, October 27th, she'll be part of the Starts Here reading series at Artifact Coffee, along with Howard Norman and Susan Call. You can find out more about the authors at startsherereadingseries.blogspot.com.